I'm Greg Gutfeld, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, November 24th, 2017. I'm Dave Anthony. It's a day retailers call black, hoping we give them a lot of green.
Well, the retailers think about making money. Today on Black Friday, the shoppers think about saving the most money.
I'm Lisa Brady. It's Black Friday, and the times, they are changing.
The malls, they were the new Main Street of America, but we're different now.
And I'm Chris Wallace. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
It's the Friday after Thanksgiving, so you'll see things like this all over the news. That was a rush at a Target last year. Shoppers actually helped pry open the doors as the stores opened, rushing in to get as many deals as they could. And millions of Americans will be part of the huge crowds again this year, trying to find
whatever we can get good deals on.
I'm looking for some new Harry Potter stuff and a Rob Gronkowski jersey and a new iPhone.
A new dog.
I'm probably going to shop for shoes and clothes.
Video games.
A really heavy jacket.
Maybe a puzzle.
Clothes, shoes, makeup, perfume, electronics, you name it, I'm buying it.
She's a retailer's dream. So how did all this start? What made this Friday black?
Black Friday, Dave, comes from Black Ink, associated with profitability for retailers.
Bert Flickinger is a retail analyst, managing director with Strategic Resource Group.
It's the first day of the most important month, or 30 days of holiday retail, where many retailers in those 30 days can literally make between 20% to 40%+ of their yearly profits. Hence, the end of red ink or losing money to black ink and making money.
How long has it been thought of that way?
It's been thought of that way nearly for 100 years since George Draper Dayton started Dayton Hudson and Harry Gordon Selfridge started Marshall Fields before going over to Selfridge's and the Macy's and the Bloomingdale's and the respective families, Nordstrom's, et cetera, all started their stores back in the beginning.
Some stores opened last night on Thanksgiving, getting a head start on Black Friday. Kicking off a season that's 32 days long, one day more than the number between Thanksgiving and Christmas last year.
Feliz Navidad.
Oh, yes, you'll hear the music in just about all of the stores. Yeah, right. Just about everybody has a list wanting stuff under the tree or for Hanukkah. The National Retail Federation says the retail sales in November and December could reach as high as $682 billion, up to 4% more than in 2016.
Making a list, he's checking it twice.
And what type of store do you think counts on holiday sales the most? If you guessed department stores, you'd be close. They get 23% of their annual sales this time of year, just ahead of electronics and appliance stores. Number one on the list, according to the Census Bureau, jewelry stores. They do nearly 29% of their yearly business around Christmas time.
Big day to shop, and in some cases, the biggest day to shop. And at the same time, while the retailers think about making money, today on Black Friday, the shoppers think about saving the most money because oftentimes, the best bargains of the year are today, Black Friday, or certainly Black Friday weekend through this coming Monday or Cyber Monday.
The online factor, how has that changed Black Friday?
The online factor is certainly changing Black Friday to the point that PricewaterhouseCoopers put out an excellent study that over the last few years, Black Friday customer counts will be off, or spending for today, Black Friday, will be off as much as 25%. That said, the National Retail Federation is still expecting 115 million Americans to be out in the stores today, Black Friday, and for Black Friday weekend.
How well stocked are they for those so-called doorbusters people rush into the stores for?
With our strategic resource team across America, we've taken stopwatches out for as soon as the doors open to how long those big screen or 32 to 40 inch doorbusters TVs last, all the way to the Dyson and Dirt Devil vacuum cleaners that's on sale. And we're seeing the doorbusters disappear literally within 23 to 27 minutes. And what's really appalling for the retailers, in my view, illegal, is they're not issuing rain checks or provide suitable replacements.
So the key again for today for a lot of these retailers, all the people that go to the stores, some people like to do it just for sport. The key is to get them to actually spend.
The key is spending, and the key is the great guidance of Consumer Reports, which in our research, both for our firm and Cornell University where I teach, Consumer Reports has the best research anywhere. And their tips for Black Friday are shop early. So as you said, the doorbusters are still in stock. Try to beat the crowds. And really go to Consumer Reports and other highly credible independent and nonprofit websites to see what the best deals are and where they are.
We checked in with Consumer Reports about some of these doorbusters a lot of stores try to lure us in with to get us to buy a lot of stuff. Many of these deals are TVs and laptops.
All the brick-and-mortar stores are just throwing out all their best deals of the year.
Tercius Buffette is a technology expert with Consumer Reports.
In fact, like a third of consumers now like hold off on their big purchases for this holiday. So today's a really, really big deal for tech nerds like me who have been like waiting for the best deals on their products.
And the deals that are drawing us into the store for all these television sets, I have also understood that some of them are manufactured just for Black Friday. Is that true?
Well, there's two kinds of deals you should really pay attention to today. There's the doorbusters that you're probably aware of, you know, the $200 50-inch TV that you probably have never heard of and you've probably never seen before. And that's the stuff that are kind of questionable quality that, you know, are designed to lure you in but may not be the best TV. But this year we found there's a lot more brand name, big deal TVs like from Samsung and LG that, you know, are expensive. Yes, they're a little bit more expensive, but they're a better quality and ones that you would normally find in stores.
All right. So do your homework. If you're out there looking for a television, buy something that you know is an existing product, right?
TVs are a lot like furniture. You probably want to hold on to them for more than like 5 years. So you don't want to spend, you know, $100 on a 720p TV only to replace it next year, right? Like, that's wasting $200. Instead, invest a little bit more than what you would normally spend because you want to future-proof your purchase. For many families, their TVs are, you know, where the family gathers and kind of, you know, spend some time together. So think of it like an investment in your future.
What about the gamers? I mean, there's a lot of people who buy Xboxes and PlayStations. Is this a good day for that too?
Unfortunately, it's really not. See, as someone who like loves, you know, playing video games, it's actually a bad time if you, you know, you're someone on your wish list has, you know, the latest and greatest tech. Those big systems that, you know, people really want aren't really discounted this year. You won't find amazing deals on the Nintendo Switch either, or those kind of nostalgic Super Nintendo consoles. Those are hard to find. And they're like the deals on them are even harder to find.
This is Chris Wallace with your Fox News commentary coming up.
The day after Thanksgiving is still the traditional kickoff to the holiday shopping season, although more and more people shop by clicking from the comfort of home.
Online and in real stores.
I do plan to shop, but online.
They start it too early and I can do everything from home. We will definitely shop for Black Friday here.
Probably online more than in stores.
I have no desire to fight those crowds on Black Friday. Maybe a little online, but definitely not in person.
So why are we still building any malls in America?
That's a good question, but you know, there are malls that are making money.
Fox Business Network's Ashley Webster.
Even though we've seen so many of those regional shopping centers that were so popular in the 70s and 80s and perhaps the early 90s, but there are luxury type malls out there that are doing very well in places like Houston and LA, where we're seeing the high-end stores continue to appeal to high-end shoppers. Not the traditional mall with the glass ceilings and the fountains and the food courts. Those are definitely going by the way.
So it has to be something with a more interesting hook.
I think what we're seeing is there's not as many apparel stores in the new malls that are being built. You know, they're not all made up of clothing stores. There's many more restaurants. And if there is a food court, the quality of the food is much higher. But maybe they'll throw in a bowling alley, a comedy store, a climbing apparatus, something that will be more of an experience rather than the old days of parking your car and walking around all those shops for a couple of hours on a Saturday afternoon.
Is this part of the way that bricks and mortar in general is trying to compete with the wave of online shopping?
I think so. The malls was really a showcase, if you like, of what American communities were like in that time. You know, they were the new Main Street of America, but we're different now. We don't have the time to drive out to the mall and walk around and amble. Many people are busier. They have second jobs. So that's why e-commerce has played into that very much. But I do think there's a place for everyone. I think brick and mortar has overall been a little slow to react to what e-commerce has done. Now you have to provide a destination with an experience. We're always being told that millennials would love an experience more than anything else. So stores and perhaps shopping centers have to respond to that and provide more than just a bunch of stores tied together.
Does that mean there's still a future for bricks and mortar? Because sometimes it seems like if the percentage of online versus people shopping in stores keeps, you know, changing every year, eventually if you get to 100% online shopping, who's going to any stores?
Well, maybe it's because I'm not a millennial, by the way. I'm a little older than that. And I still think there's a place for people to physically go into a brick and mortar store and touch these items. How many times do you buy something online? It's never quite what you think it is. You can't tie, you can't get a good look at the material, what the product is properly. I think there is still very much a market for stores.
Shelley Branston agrees. She's a senior vice president with Salesforce.com, a firm that helps companies connect with customers.
There's more stores being open than closed, and that's sort of not necessarily what you read in the headlines today, where, you know, the retail apocalypse and all that. And here's the thing. I mean, people want to try things on. People, if they're going to buy a couch, they want to lie in it. If they're going to, you know, buy a very expensive electronic, oftentimes they do want to see it. So, I don't think that the store is dead. I don't think it. But what we are seeing, you know, these malls that are opening, it's a lot of these sort of e-commerce pure plays that started in the digital world and have realized that people still want, you know, to touch and feel products. But they've also figured out how to deliver these more personalized, connected, and fast experiences. So they've kind of cracked that code, and they're bringing that really, you know, personalized experience into the brick-and-mortar store.
The problem is being able to compete on a price level, because they already operate a very slim margin. So that is a problem. But if you can provide more, a very good shopping experience, I still think there's a place for that in the overall economy.
We do hear about so many stores closing, though, or at least closing many of their locations.
I think that is a product of just overbuilding terribly in the last couple of decades. You know, there was a number given recently that absolutely shocked me. It said that for every American out there, there's 26 square feet of retail space for every person in America. In Europe, for every person in Europe, there's 2.5 square feet. Yes, we are a consumer economy, so it kind of makes sense, but overbuilt. Of all the stores that Macy's is closing or has closed, 60% of them were within 10 miles of each other. And I think not only the malls, but certainly the department stores, that's been the overall problem, overbuilding, often ahead of the population growth. So really, you could call it a rebalancing, perhaps.
Rebalancing of retail. What do you think survives? 10 years from now, what do you think are the most likely bricks and mortar locations to survive?
That's a good question. I think the traditional stores that we've known growing up and going back in time, the Sears and the JCPenney's, have really, really struggled to keep up. I'm not too sure whether they can survive. High-end stores continue to appeal to, you know, who knows, the top 1%, as they say, of income earners. I think it's going to have to be a situation where you do provide more than just a parking lot, a big, wide tarmac parking lot, and a bunch of stores together. I think this is already happening. I do think e-commerce will continue to grow, there's no doubt. But I do believe stores that can provide good shopping experience, qualified people working there that can really help.
But Branston says it may also depend on what you're shopping for. furniture, for instance, and the age of the shopper.
I think what's different is the millennials are sort of, you know, they're sort of the first line, the first over the line in terms of some of these emerging technologies like voice. And they also are incredibly demanding. I mean, you know, they expect these more personalized experiences when they come into a store. But they're willing. We found that, you know, they're 2.5 times more willing, sort of millennials versus boomers or other generations, to share their personal information in order to, you know, have this more personalized and connected experience. So if you think about, like, a loyalty program, you know, millennials will say, okay, I'll sign up for this. They're not rejecting them. But as a in exchange, when I get to your store, if I have, you know, a $5 coupon, don't make me dig through my, you know, find it in my wallet or dig through my purse. Like, it needs to be available to me right there in your app.
No matter what website you're using, something always gets difficult to navigate. At some point, it's hard to find an answer to some question that you have, and it would be nice to be able to ask someone in person,
but
hey,
you have
how
to
does
have,
this work?
But, you know, someone said to me the other day, you know, they were in a, I forget where it was, a Sears or somewhere, and they'd actually shut down the customer service department. So that's just exactly what you don't need, because that's the one thing you can get when you're physically in a store that you can't get online when you're just clicking. The big problem for me as an older person is I love online. I get all the convenience. I understand it. Free shipping is terrific. But when I get it and it doesn't quite fit properly, or I don't like what I thought I was getting, to me, then that becomes a pain. And so I'm thinking that that there are other people out there, certainly, who will go to the store and figure that out before they've actually bought something, and they have to go through all the time and trial of having to return it and get it replaced.
Sometimes there's no substitute for human interaction.
What a concept.
Ashley Webster, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Download Living the Bream with Shannon Bream.
I don't think as long as Donald Trump is the president, anything's going to slow down. We have material and stories and excitement every single day.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
This year's Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade is already in the books. But did you know the team that makes it happen is already working on next year's parade? Yep, it's a year-round endeavor. The people who bring the iconic parade to life have been doing it for years, decades in some cases. John Piper has worked 37 Macy's Thanksgiving Day parades and says there's no break when you're on that team.
People ask me, when do you start working on the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade? The real answer is we never stop. People say, what, you start the day after Thanksgiving? If we haven't already started before then, yes, we do.
Bill Barton has been doing the parade for 23 years and says more is expected every year.
We used to put floats together on parade night in about an hour. Now some floats have taken 3 hours to assemble.
Piper says the technology behind their work has evolved.
Back when I first started, everything was done with hand-drawn drafting. Today, with advanced 3D technology, we're able to do things that are a little bit more complex, but the end result is still the same.
Kim Montgomery's on the team and has worked on 18 parades.
One of the things that we're working on right now is to become a little more innovative with our ideas about how we use costume, how we use our floats and the costumes together.
This year's parade was the 91st Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, and planning for number 92 is already underway. Piper says it's more than just working with the nuts and bolts and balloons and floats. They're an essential piece of the holiday memories people will have for a lifetime.
We're caretakers of something that we think genuinely reaches into the hearts of everybody in America and puts a smile on their face on the first day of the holiday season.
Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
Download and make it Hammer Time with Bill Hemmer.
Welcome, Kellyanne Conway.
Carl Rove, welcome.
Ainsley Earhart.
Thank you, Bill.
Do
I like the Hemmer Time.
Hemmer Time.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcast.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Chris Wallace. Chris Wallace.
What's on your mind?
We're going to have a big show on Sunday. We're going to be talking about the rash of sex harassment cases. We'll also talk about tax reform, which is going to be voted on the Senate floor. But I want to talk to you now on Thanksgiving weekend about gratitude. As I've gotten older, and had kids and grandkids, I think more and more about gratitude. And I think that we probably don't spend enough time being grateful for all the blessings we have. Too many of us, myself included, over the years, spend time wondering about the things that don't happen, that we don't get, that we wish would happen to us, what worrying about the next thing. And I think we should spend more time just being grateful for the blessings that we have. I will tell you, as I've thought about that and tried to practice it more in my life, it makes me a lot happier. Instead of having the kind of wannabe or wanna get, I used to read my kids a book about the Berenstain Bears and a bad case of the gimmies. Just be thankful for the blessings of what you have in your life. I hope you'll feel that way. And this Thanksgiving, I certainly will as well. Thanks so much, and I hope you watch the show on Sunday. I'm Chris Wallace.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.